morning.
Good morning.
Welcome to the Court of Appeals. To my right is Justice Bill Meyer.
Morning.
To my left is Justice Bill Brigham, and I'm Justice Ann Gardner. And we are your panel for this morning. We only have one oral argument scheduled today, and that is Mark Fleming versus the State of Texas. If the lawyers are ready, I will ask the clerk to call the case. Oh, Megan has just completed taking the bar examination.
That's what we heard.
Okay.
May it please the court, Mr. Richard Gladden arguing for appellant and Ms. Catherine Luft arguing for the state.
Good morning again, and may it please the court. The issues before the Court of Appeals or that are brought in this case are both predicated upon constitutional questions. This entire appeal presents questions of law that are to be considered de novo by the Court of Appeals. I know there was some question about that in the state's brief, and they've since conceded that it is purely legal questions involved. My client is challenging under both the Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment to the United States Constitution, as well as Article 1, Section 19 of the Texas Constitution, the constitutionality of Section 22021 of the Texas Penal Code. That is what used to be called the statutory rape statute. It's referred to as sexual assault now. When I first approached this case, I certainly knew from law school that as a matter of statutory construction, not only Texas, but states across the country had interpreted their statutes to mean that knowledge of a female's age was not relevant, was neither an element to be proven by the state, nor any form of an affirmative defense, a lack of knowledge, could not be an affirmative defense by the defendant as a matter of statutory interpretation. The courts considered those statutes to have been a deliberate legislative abrogation of what otherwise would require mens rea, that is, the defendant's proof of the defendant's knowledge that a female was under the age of 17. Of course, we do have an aggravating element in this case that has to do with under 14. I talk about that in my reply brief a little bit, but really the critical age we're talking about between legal and illegal is knowledge of a female being one day under 17 or 17 or older. I did not find any cases at the controlling decisional law that would apply in this court or any decisions of the Court of Criminal Appeals of Texas, or even for that matter of the United States Supreme Court, dealing with either the federal constitutional due process question or the due course of law protections afforded by our state constitution. There are a number of states that actually have considered it to be an affirmative defense, like California, as a matter of statutory interpretation. But if you just get to the constitutional questions, the case law is a lot more sparse. It seems like all the cases go back to, including the Texas first precedent on this, go back to a case called Regina versus Prince, which is an 1876 decision by an intermediate, it was the English Court of Criminal Appeal, is what they call themselves. And that was a case that addressed statutory interpretation. In fact, they dealt with mens rea as being a canon of statutory interpretation, not a constitutional principle. And we have some problems with, number one, an English Court of Criminal Appeal in 1876 interpreting an English statute somehow being controlling or even persuasive on what the framers of the Due Process Clause intended, either in 1788, 100 years before, or in 1861 when the 14th Amendment was adopted. We also make the same argument with regard to the relevance of that English statutory interpretation insofar as it might be urged to be controlling of what the Texas due course of law provision provided that was in its present form as originally adopted in 1845. However, If you go back, I had to go to Dallas to go find this Regina versus Prince case everybody keeps talking about, and I have included it as an appendix in this brief, or the appellant's brief. And what you'll find by not only carefully reading it, but also the subsequent decision in Tolson, where they clarified what their meaning was, and that is something akin to what we would call a transferred intent. And in Regina versus Prince, you had a situation where a gentleman claimed that the state should have proven that he had knowledge of the age of the female that he removed from the custody of her parents. And a jury had found that he reasonably believed that, both subjectively as well as objectively. And what the English court said, to the extent it is even relevant to the constitutional questions I've raised, what they said was, is because, and in the statutory rape context as well, because the offense, the conduct would be criminal or at least immoral anyway, even if he had known that the girl was, or if he had reasonably believed that the girl was of age, that the culpable mental state can be transferred to substitute for the lack of knowledge of age. And the Texas case of Eden versus State from 1897, which I also discuss in the brief, followed that English common law understanding was, is that because it's illegal to have sex out of wedlock or to commit adultery by having sex while you're married but with someone other than your spouse, that was illegal anyway. And under Eden, if you read the passage at the top of page 20, that is the holding, is that basically if you're engaged in conduct like adultery or fornication that would be illegal anyway, that intent can be transferred over to a lack of knowledge or an alleged lack of knowledge of a female's age when you have sex with them. The few cases the state has cited that actually have addressed, federal cases, that have addressed the constitutional question of mens rea versus some kind of exception, were all decided prior to the U.S. Supreme Court's decision in Lawrence versus Kansas. Or not Lawrence versus Kansas, Lawrence versus Texas. And in Lawrence, the U.S. Supreme Court said that even people out of wedlock have a fundamental substantive constitutional right to engage in intimate sexual relations, even if they're not married. And although we certainly are not saying you have a constitutional right to knowingly have sex with someone underage, you can't transfer it, so long as you have that constitutional right recognized in Lawrence, you can't transfer any unlawful intent to substitute for a lack of knowledge. And that has been the interpretation, although sometimes most cases gloss over it to say you don't have to prove any kind of knowledge, you don't have to prove any kind of culpability. Now, what we propose or what we say is required by the Constitution is one of two things. If an issue is raised, the state should be required to show that someone had some level of culpability, whether it be negligence on the low end to perhaps reckless or maybe even knowing and intentional sexual relations with a female or a minor under the age of 17. Or, if an issue is raised, the defendant should have a constitutional right to present proof and have a jury question on, number one, did he subjectively believe that the female or the underage person was 17 years or older? And if he did, in good faith, the second component would be whether it was objectively reasonable for the defendant to have that belief. Because the case law in Texas, we don't have a Court of Criminal Appeals decision other than Johnson, which was a case of statutory interpretation. We've got a number of cases the state cites going back to even the 50s or 40s, which were also Texas statutory interpretation cases. And so what we're going to get into is this question about whether mens rea really means anything or whether there's some legal basis for just completely getting rid of it for a certain class of offenses. I submit to you that there are no cases in English common law or American common law prior to 1876, which is Regina versus Prince, that ever even addressed the question of creating a mens rea exception for statutory rape, and that the common law authorities that I cite that were shortly thereafter, and as well as the Eden case in Texas, all followed the rule that says it's a transferred intent. And we don't have any statutes presently that you can transfer intent from, such as fornication or adultery.
Yeah, it's a question. I thought I heard you say that Johnson and Vasquez, in your opinion, do not deal with or address the constitutional issues?
Absolutely not. If you read those decisions, in fact, there's cases that cite them or interpret Vasquez particularly, treats it as being a case of statutory interpretation. Judge Price, in the concurring opinion in Johnson, did address this question of whether they should consider the doctrine of constitutional avoidance. There is no, unfortunately, because the Court of Criminal Appeals has resolved the question of statutory interpretation and legislative intent, you can't engage in any constitutional avoidance doctrine because the statute has been definitively interpreted by the highest court, criminal court in this state. Judge Price's concurring opinion did, in dicta, talk about the constitutional avoidance question and whether or not it would be constitutional or not to interpret it that way. But that was not a question that was before the Court of Criminal Appeals, and it certainly wasn't a decision that was made by the majority of the majority opinion in Johnson.
Another question.
Yeah.
If you were through, did you find any case law? This goes back a little bit to your earlier argument, tracing the chronology of the history of the requirement of mens rea. Did you find any difference between the federal and state due process versus due course language?
I didn't find any cases. I discuss in the brief, our opening brief, the fact that Edward Livingston was a big, big proponent of notice, certainly of legal notice of law, and I discuss that as well as factual notice. We know that the legislative history going back to 1836 even reflects an intent by the framers of Texas constitutional provisions, up to and beyond 1845, that they intended it for common people not to be, the unwary not to be trapped by statutory law, criminal statutory law. In this case, what you have is a trap not just for the unwary, you've got a trap for the weary. Someone can do everything he can to determine and dispel any possible notion that some female is under 17. And under Texas law, it just doesn't make any difference. In this case, without going too much into the facts of the case, we think we raised an issue. The female herself said she didn't know whether my client knew that she was under 17 or not. She's got a Facebook page where she says she's 20 years old. She's a criminal justice major at University of North Texas. She talks to his friends, tells both of them that she's over 17 or 17 or older. In fact, they were of the belief that she was over 21 because she was going to go to the bars with them. And so there are probably varying degrees of different factual scenarios that can be raised, but we think in this case we raised a factual issue that a jury should have been able to consider either by requiring the state to prove a knowledge as an element or the defendant to be able to raise, if the evidence supports it, an affirmative defense of a subjective lack of knowledge and good faith believe in the age being over 17, as well as an objective determination by a jury that the belief was reasonable.
Mr. Gladden,
yes.
Would you mind addressing the fact that appears to be both in your brief and in the state's brief that the appellate in this case first met this young lady whenever he was visiting a babysitter, mm-hmm. who was looking after her and her younger sibling, wouldn't that connote knowledge on his part that the child was less than 17 years of age?
That was a disputed question of fact as to, first of all, she didn't live at the same house that he had been to before. There's some passage of time, I can't recall how many years it was, but the female herself said she didn't know whether my client knew her age or whether she was 17 years of age or older. My client said he didn't recall seeing her or being aware she was even the same person. He had apparently been over to that house because he was at the time dating the babysitter, who was much older. But there was a disputed question of fact, and I think a jury appropriately should resolve the question of whether my client did or didn't know. And if he didn't know subjectively, and it made some, and there's some evidentiary basis to believe, not through his own fault, but through the information received from other sources, including the female, that she was. Okay, yeah, the legal question, we're not getting into a, whether the.
Not looking at the facts.
Right. Of course,
Potentially not be considered, shouldn't be considered by us in the way we're looking at that's law and the constitutional issues you raise. Is that your position?
That's our position, and the fact that we do raise a fact issue for the jury. If it was just a thing where we didn't have anything in the record to support it, it would be another occasion. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
May it please the court, counsel. Over and over, courts have rejected claims that the state and federal constitutions require proof that a defendant charged with a sexual offense knew that his victim was underage. In Black versus State, the Court of Criminal Appeals, while doing an analysis on the constitutionality of the child capital murder provision, directly stated that no scienter with respect to the lack of consent in aggravated sexual assault is required when the victim is a child. Also in that case, the court stated that mistake of fact is not a defense to aggravated sexual assault. In doing so, the court noted that the state has a legitimate and compelling interest in protecting the well-being of its children. Counsel cites Lawrence v. Texas, but in Lawrence, the court couldn't have been clearer in emphasizing that it was only considering the constitutional rights of adults. It's not applicable to children. Last night I was looking for more cases interpreting Lawrence. I found one that's not quite on point because it's discussing why 2112, which is the improper relationship between educator and student, is constitutional in light of Lawrence, and that's at 212 Southwest 3D 483. And then that court just reiterates that Lawrence is not applicable to minors. Also, several cases that I've cited in my case list site in my brief were decided after Lawrence. There was Grice in 2005, Wilcox 2007, Killaru 2005, and again I cite Wilcox under the mistake of facts defense. And in light of all those cases, I'll request this court to affirm the decision of the trial court below. And unless there are any questions, I'll conclude.
One quick question.
Yes.
Should we at all look at cases or statutes from other states, reasoning as to why other states may have allowed either required a mens rea or allowed an affirmative defense?
I think it's always good to look at the reasoning of other states, and since we haven't really decided that these two provisions are treated differently, I think one thing you'll find is California is the only state that has applied a mistake of fact defense where there's not one constitutional or not one provided in the statute. And Texas generally doesn't follow California's lead.
Thank you.
Ms. Luft, I have a question.
Yes.
You say the Black case, and that's Black against State 26-3rd, 895, citing your brief.
Yes, Your Honor.
Your contention is that that case addresses a constitutional question that relates to mens rea.
Yes, Your Honor.
But it doesn't specifically address the question raised in this case. In terms of defense and in terms of men's right under the federal provisions of the federal constitution or the Texas?
Actually, it's doing it under the equal protection clauses of both. It's kind of a similar analysis that are used in some of these cases discussing the constitutionality.
All right. Other than the Black against State case, did you find any other case precedent? You said you found a reference to Lawrence in 212.
Do you mean specifically to the mistake of fact defense? Or?
Yes, ma'am. The mistake of fact defense as a constitutional right under the federal constitution and the state constitution are the requirement of mens rea, lack of requirement of mens rea under both of those provisions. Did you find any? any other Texas case?
In Kalaru in Dallas, and I've cited it in my brief.
Which one?
Kalaru v. State, and that's, they discuss federal due process challenge as to mistake of age and decide that that's statute was rationally related to the state's interest in protecting underage children from sexual contact with adults. In Gomez, it looks at the state constitutional due process challenge to lack of instruction on mistake of fact. Wilcox discussed the federal constitution with mistake of fact, and Ransom, the federal due process claim in that court.
I'd like to respond a little bit to what she indicated. First of all, in footnote 1 on page 2 of our reply brief, we have listed the cases relied upon and which the state claims were constitutional issue cases. The cases listed in footnote 1 on page 2 of our reply brief, none of those cases have addressed the constitutional due process or due course of law issue. And so the state is just mistaken when they cite Vasquez, Jackson, Grice, Black. And as a matter of fact, if you look at Roof versus State, a Court of Criminal Appeals decision, it expressly identifies Vasquez as a case of statutory interpretation. So the state can throw out a lot of statutory interpretation cases, but they have not, except to a limited extent, ever cited any cases dealing with a constitutional question. Now, Justice Gardner, you indicated that the court might perhaps look at statutes in other states to determine what the federal constitution means, or statutes in other states to determine what the Texas constitution means.
Okay. Well, cases in other states, for example, that have the similar language to the Texas Constitution.
I think that would be appropriate. I think you mentioned statutes from other states to define our Constitution, both federal and state.
Constitutionality.
Right. And so there was one thing that I didn't address on opening, and that was that in the Morissette decision, the state did point out that the U.S. Supreme Court noted in Morissette that there was, in a footnote, that an exception to the general mens rea requirement had come to be recognized in the latter part of the 19th century. We don't deny that, as a matter of statutory law, that the common law had developed towards the end of the 19th century to recognize this transfer intent doctrine as an exception to the mens rea requirement and confined to statutory rape cases. And if you look at Eden from 1895 in Texas, that's what that case is a statutory interpretation case that says the common law, and following the common law of this Regina versus Prince decision. The problem I have is a lot of these cases just say there is no mens rea knowledge of age required just because we say so. But if you track those cases back, they all go back to Regina versus Prince, which was decided and an intermediate English appellate court interpreting an English statute that was repealed thereafter. And the idea that our federal constitution or our state constitution is somehow going to be bound up to the Regina versus Prince, and even if it is, few cases recognize what we're arguing is that there's a transfer intent issue, that if it's already illegal or immoral, to have which immorality can't be the basis of a criminal offense under our federal constitution anymore. But if there's, at the time most of those cases were decided, it was illegal to engage in fornication or to engage in adultery. And if you knew you were having sex out of wedlock, it was permissible constitutionally, we think, to transfer that immoral, or not immoral, but that illegal culpability to substitute for a lack of knowledge. And that was really the meaning of the Regina versus Prince case, as well as the Eden case, as well as all these other cases. And when we got later on into the middle of the 20th century, people just kind of started glossing over the transfer of intent doctrine that was part of it from the beginning.
Well, Mr. Black, your this case is first impression as far as the state of Texas.
Yeah, it sure is.
Did you find in your research any authority in any other state?
No, there is.
To this matter, or is it your contention this is a case of first impression in the country?
Well, as far as there are some federal courts of appeals that have addressed it, but not the original intent or the transfer intent issue. There is a law review, an ALR article that's cited in Johnson, and I believe it may be either in the majority opinion or the concurring opinion, and it's got a lot of cases in there. But what you'll see in that ALR treaties or article is that California and these other states that have found there to be a defense or required the state to prove knowledge as an element, they did so as a matter of constitutional avoidance. They interpreted their statutes, unlike Texas and Johnson. In California and these other states, they interpreted their statutes under the doctrine of constitutional avoidance to say, we imply a knowledge requirement even though it's not in the statute, much like the Morissette case in the U.S. Supreme Court.
You say we can't do that because our state has already interpreted the statutes?
That's right. That's right. Because the Court of Criminal Appeals in Johnson has flat out said, in fact, probably 15 cases before it, that this section of the penal code, under no circumstances, allows either a defense for lack of knowledge or requires proof of knowledge of age. And so you just can't get around that. That's as a matter of statutory interpretation. Thank you. If the court doesn't have anything left, I'll look.
Thank you very much.
Thank you both for excellent briefing on this issue. Very interesting. Your case is submitted.
Thank you.
And we appreciate your work. And at this time, court will stand adjourned.
All rise. The Honorable Court of Appeals.